Hello and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris. Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. The minimum wage order of 1,500 ringgit per month took effect a year ago for businesses with five or more workers across all sectors and states. Now, for micro SMEs, which means companies with fewer than five full-time workers, the implementation of the new minimum wage was initially postponed for 6 months and then delayed further for another 6 months. So now it's set to be implemented in July of 2023. Now, the question is, might there be further delays in implementation? Will businesses say they're not ready or able? Is there a possible way to develop a minimum wage policy that benefits workers without harming small businesses? Joining me on the line to discuss this further, I have Dr. William Ng. He's a chairperson of the Small and Medium Enterprises Association of Malaysia. Dato, thank you so much for joining me on the show today. I'm hoping we can start our conversation by looking back at the past year. For businesses with five workers or more, how has the implementation of the 1,500 ringgit minimum wage been?
I think thanks, Melissa, for having us on the show. It's been a difficult period for the SMEs, not just because of the minimum wages issue, but of course for the other issues that has hit the SMEs quite badly. We must remember that we have just only now recovered from the pandemic. In fact, if we look at the statistics, while we have recovered by 3.0% in 2021, SMEs in general are lagging behind the larger companies when it comes to recovery, 1% versus 4.4%. So when the double whammy of having had to now pay a lot more or forced to pay a lot more based on minimum wages, it becomes very difficult for many of SMEs to stomach. But there's really no choice because a law is a law and we just have to comply. So by and large, you see that a lot of the SMEs are actually complaining to say that, look, the margin has now shrunk to almost a negative level for some of the SMEs.
Right. But the minimum wage was last raised, I think, in 2013. Now, did it hurt micro SMEs then when it was last raised? Sorry, excuse me. In February of 2020 was the last time it was raised. Did it hurt SMEs then?
Of course it did. I think it was the timing. I think by and large, everybody was quite happy to follow through the agreement then. It wasn't very big jump in 2020. But it was the timing because nobody expected that the pandemic will come. And when the pandemic did, there was no stopping the minimum wages because it was already passed the law and you simply have to adhere to it. So the timing was one thing. And that is, again, the bigger problem was actually the one that was implemented last year, the jump from 2002 to 2005, which we felt was way too high, a 25% jump at the time when SMEs are recovering, at the time when the pandemic is full-blown out there. Business are locked down and so on. We would have preferred even then that any increment at all would have been a little bit lower, perhaps in 1003 or 1350 instead of the huge jump of 35% of the fund.
Okay, so the question also is, I mean, besides the huge jump, surely there are other ways for businesses to keep operational costs low apart from just looking at the issue of wages?
Yeah, I think it's one of the considerations, of course, the issue of profitability for most SMEs who are in the manufacturing sector. Margin can be as low as 5 to 10%. And wages is generally, for most SMEs, either the highest or the second highest cost component. So when you increase the wages by 5%, this would essentially wipe out as much as half or even more of your profit, even all. If your margin is at 5%, any increment at that stage would mean that you have to now relook in your operations, look at what other fat they can cut. And over the past 10, 15 years, most SMEs have already cut a sort of fat. So where else do you cut? If you cannot cut down on employees, you have to cut from somewhere. The quality or you may then have to, if you have no other choices, we then have to just raise the price and pass the incremental cost to the consumers, as many have. So we're not saying that there should not be any increment in wages. We understand the concept that any profit the company is making should be shared equitably with the workers who actually made it possible. At the same time, I think the consultation and that planning could have been done with regards to the movement interest.
Can I ask you what you mean by better consultation? What would you have hoped for the government to have done previous to the implementation of the new minimum wage?
We already have a mechanism to do so, and it's because of the National Wages Consultative Council. But again, this could have been a bit more inclusive. You know, I mean, it worked in 2015, right? At a time when there were not so many labor movements, there were a lot less trade unions, there were a lot less associations, there were a lot less competition regionally and globally. So a council like that worked then. But today, we are looking at a very different economy, a very different market. So what we need to do is a lot more engagement with other stakeholders, including SMEs, including sectoral trade associations, so on and on. I'm afraid that wasn't exactly done. So that is something that we hope we can do.
Okay, so can I focus specifically on micro SMEs, companies with fewer than 5 workers? In what ways has the 12 months delay helped them prepare for a higher minimum wage?
In all honesty, we're not even sure whether there should have been a 12-month delay, especially for the micro SME. It makes very little difference whether you delay by 6 months, 12 months. The issue is not just readiness or preparedness of the micro SMEs. It's really whether the micro SMEs even have the correct resources and the structural support for them to be able to provide the kind of wages that has been necessary to economy. If you look at where the micro SMEs are, many of them are in the distributed trade, in retail, F&B, in small trading, and so on. And for most of these people, at most they're hiring 1, 2, 3 people. And any incremental to the wages will become subject to the cost structure. How do we prepare them? Some say, look, you know, you just have to digitalize some of these micro SMEs. You need to let them actually, if it's a retail sector, for example, force them to use POS instead of doing manually, force them to go through e-wallet and so on, so that you can reduce the number of people to do orders, for example. But in reality, for many micro SMEs, even this digitalization are way too costly for them to implement. We can honestly cost you between 200, 300 a month for a medium-sized business, a medium-sized restaurant, and then spending up $1 million at a month, for example, 200 to 300 ringgit is nothing. But for an SME, between just 2,000 and 3,000, ring it a month in business, you know, flipping burgers, 200, 300 ringgit a month in POS cost is essentially the entire profit. So if you're not able to digitalize that, and you still have to then rely on manual labor to do some of the work that that larger companies can avoid, how do you then increase the salary, you know, but pay more?
Okay, so is what you're saying, are you saying that you want micro SMEs to be exempt from the new minimum wage?
No, I'm not saying that. But what we should do is, and we should have done that many years ago, is allow wages to be dictated by visiting one of those market forces. But not everybody. I'm not saying that anyone should get anything less than 1,500. I'm not saying that at all. But not everybody need must have that amount. There are people who are jobless out there who are saying that, look, you know, if I get a 1,000 ringgit in job, I'm happy with it as long as I can bring home some money to the family, for example. So we should have allowed the market to dictate what kind of wages are being paid to various jobs. So true to us, that is something that should have been done.
Right. Dr. William, while I have you on the line, the couple of minutes we have left, can I ask you, what do you make of the calls asking for higher EPF contributions for employees earning 4,000 and below? I think right they're asking for from now 13% to 20% for specific low-wage employees.
I think it's true. I think if you ask me, we're really fucking up the wrong tree. Instead of forcing the employers to now pay more in EPF, we absolutely should create more industries and more jobs that are high value. If you look at our E&P sector, for example, I think up to about a decade ago, we're very much still a low value manufacturing hub, essentially EMS, electronics manufacturing, services. And only in the past 10 years that we have moved up the value chain, we now are able to design IC and so on, which means in turn that we now have a higher paying job, higher value job, more meaningful jobs. And I think that is what the government should really focus on, so that Malaysians in general will have the higher salary, higher income, and in turn, therefore, a higher retirement nest. Instead of now telling the SMEs to take over the burden of ensuring that SMEs or rather the workers have sufficient retirement fund. So I think absolutely about cutting up the wrong tree. Work on the high value jobs rather than forcing the SMEs to pay more at the time when we simply cannot afford to pay anymore.
All right, Dato' William, thank you so much for speaking with me. Dato' William Ng, Chairperson of the SME Association of Malaysia. We're going to take a very quick break here on Consider This. We'll be back with more. Stay tuned. Hi, welcome back to Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris. Dr. Juwita Mohamad joins me now. She's the Director of the Economics and Business Unit as well as Director of Research at the think tank Ideas Malaysia. Juwita, thank you so much for joining me on the show. The Minimum Wages Order 2022, that came into effect a year ago, but it looks like the implementation has been delayed multiple times for specific types of businesses. I'm wondering whether you can walk us through your observations about why it's been so difficult for the government to implement and enforce compliance of a higher minimum wage.
So I think there are many different layers to this. And so as an observer, I do feel that Malaysia as a developing country introducing the minimum wage law and keeping to the schedule of increases, I think that is a very good first step for us. So going back to, you know, the economics of wages and the economics of business, so I think from the SMEs side, I do agree that, I mean, their concerns are quite valid, but I would like to also present on the flip side. So as a business, an increase of costs in labor, in capital, in raw materials would impact the profits that are being made. But again, but on the flip side, the costs of goods and also services have been increasing for the past 20 years to 30 years or so. And now it's being compounded with higher inflationary pressures. So again, we cannot be paying fresh graduates the same nominal wages that we have seen in the last 20 years. Wages need to increase based on demand and supply of each industry. It is clear, again, as I mentioned, that as a developing country that aspires to be a developed country, and when we think about a developed country, it also means a high-income country. So here, it is very clear that wages need to increase over time. So in my opinion, if the minimum wage law is a blanket, then it needs to be implemented nationally with no carve-outs. And I do feel that there are policies that can help the SMEs in the short to medium term. The government has grants and has different channels for aid, for financing for the SMEs, but these SMEs, again, would need to be registered and formalized. So again, in Malaysia, our informal sector is quite big, it's huge, and those grants might not be able to be channeled to them specifically because of these like criteria that that are not really being communicated so well.
So again, I might come back to that to see how we can kind of plug the gaps of the SMEs that fall through the cracks. But I want to pick up on something you said earlier. You mentioned that if this were to be a blanket minimum wage policy, it should be implemented across the board, no carve-outs. Do you think that should be the case, Dr. Juwita? Should government be rethinking this one-size-fits-all minimum wage policies, because there are different industries with different labor requirements and different states, different regions with different living costs? Should it be a blanket minimum wage?
So that's a very good question indeed. And if we do look at our trading partner like Vietnam, they have different minimum wage for different states. And when you look at countries like Germany, for example, they have minimum wage for different industries. And this again goes back to the structure of the not just of the economy, but the structure of governance within a selected country. So again, in Vietnam, it's quite decentralized. The state government has a lot to say when it comes to attracting FDIs and also imposing or introducing different guidelines, different set of rules and different set of rules and guidelines for FDIs. And they have also reinstated or introduced their own localized minimum wage laws or minimum wage threshold for different states. So that's Vietnam. And in Germany, where trade unions are very, very strong, you see that the bargaining power actually leads to the creation or the introduction of different minimum wages set by different industries and different sectors. So for Malaysia, I think this is a very good step. We have finally implemented or introduced a minimum wage law that is to be revised every 2 years. But I do think that for every revision, there needs to be an in-depth analysis of what are the variables that they look at. It needs to be published. Does it look at inflation? Does it look at other types of costs on the ground? So there needs to be a bit more research and study before setting a wage increase in a given year.
Well, I like that you pointed to other countries, but the fact that their conditions or their context is different from us, decentralized from federals and also very strong union presence. So different from Malaysia, I think Malaysia's labour market has its own complexities. We have a big presence of migrant workers, both documented and undocumented. We have weak levels of unionization. Help us think through some of these complexities, Dr. Juita. What other labor policies need to go hand in hand with higher minimum wage?
So on the one hand, we do have the newly introduced minimum wage laws. And I do think again, and I believe that workers, union workers empowerment will also be very helpful to drive wages to the levels that are fair and sustainable for the employers and also employees. So you have the law, but you also have the push from the industries themselves. So there has been like now one of the reasons for static wages or sticky wages is that there is a huge dependency on cheap labor, on unskilled workers from abroad. So there has been talk about lessening dependence on unskilled workers. But then this goes back to the need to restructure our manufacturing sector. What are we producing? And then this again goes back to the education system and the need to revamp TVET programs and its governance. And again, if we want to be a high income country, a developed country, we need to have a relatively abundant share of skilled workers, and they need to be complementing technologies embodied in machineries in the medium term. So if that is happening, we also need to revamp the structure of our economy. There needs to be a shift from producing low value added products to a higher value added products. So there needs to be a paradigm shift of some sort.
Well, I mean, there's still so much resistance, though, to implementing any kind of higher minimum wage. In fact, we just spoke to SME Association of Malaysia, who said that actually, if it wasn't such a big jump, it would have been more palatable to small businesses. They're suggesting 1,300. Looking at the long-term consequences, Dr. Juwita, what would be some of the consequences, the economic consequences of not implementing a minimum higher wage that is closer to a fair living wage?
So let me just break down the components of our economy. So the workers, they represent the head of families and also family members. And together they represent the households in the country. So the goods and services are increasing in prices over time due to, again, demand, factors like exchange rates, inflationary pressures, among others. And then with that in mind, of course, wages need to be increased, especially when our social protection plan or social protection framework in Malaysia only covers those in the formal sector. So it doesn't cover the informal sector at all, the informal workers. So an increase in wages in a timely manner can cushion the impact of higher inflationary pressures. It can also cushion the impact of increases in OPR rates. BNM just raised it like yesterday. So again, in times like these, wages and salaries can be a part of the social protection framework for those in the informal sector, especially when our existing social protection system can very much be improved upon tremendously to protect households and vulnerable groups without bursting the government's annual budget.
Okay. Well, in the couple of minutes that we have left, what was it that you would like Malaysians who are watching tonight, the Malaysian public, to better understand about the issue of the implementation of minimum wage? I know a lot of people who own small businesses or know people who own small businesses who may be on the other side, or even Malaysians who are concerned that higher minimum wage would lead to higher prices of goods and services.
Okay, so let's fast forward like 5-10 years from now. What would happen if wages do not increase over time in a very fair and equitable manner? Our brain drain issue will persist. FDIs will not have the human capital that are needed to support the automation and also digitization wave that is being pushed by the My Digital Blueprint. We won't be attracting FDIs that are producing higher value-added products. We will be stuck in this limbo as an aging society without reaching the next development stage. So again, I'm painting a very, very bleak picture, but that could be the reality for Malaysia, as we are already an aging society where about 7% of our population is already 65 years of age and beyond.
Right. Dr. Juwita, also very quickly, I wanted to ask you, you mentioned that we have a scheduled increase for minimum wage throughout the years. Are you concerned that every time there is an increase, we might see the same challenges repeated, the same challenges persisting every time the minimum wage is raised? How might we avoid repeating the same types of multiple delays that we've seen in the past couple of times?
So again, this is where the rule of law would apply. So again, flexibility can be seen as something good, but in this case, again, if flexibility is granted this time around, then maybe flexibility can be granted in the next time around. So setting the standard, setting expectations to the market, setting expectations to the economy as a whole is very important. And again, it doesn't mean that when wages need to be increased or will increase, that the government will not have other policies to soften the blow on SMEs, whether it's in the informal or also the formal sector. So there can be additional cushion on the ground.
Thank you so much for speaking with me, Dr. Juwita Mohamad from Ideas Malaysia, wrapping up this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris, signing off for the evening. Thank you so much for watching, and good night.